Segment left with Larry Krause, and then he'll be saying goodnight to all. Rich in Little Rock is on the line, I believe, listening on the signal, KSYG. Come on board with your question, Rich, please.
Yes, sir. Can I make a quick observation?
Real quick.
Okay. Stan and Larry, Stan, what I've seen in 65 since I've researched this is that those people who want to know this are going to be open-minded to listen anyway, regardless of how much pressure I put behind it. So I don't waste my time to try to convince somebody. I just share the information I've got. If they want to go from there, fine. If they don't, there's plenty of us out here who want to share this information. The question for Friedman, Stan, I'd like to find out what was the most convincing sighting or case that convinced you of this?
Interesting. I don't think of case so much as a collection of data. Project Blue Book Special Report 14, an official study done for the United States Air Force by Battelle Memorial Institute, although their name is not a connection with classified, with data on 3,200 sites, quality evaluations, categorizations of all the cases, 240 charts, tables, graphs. I was in data heaven, and I was astonished that, much to my surprise, that already written 14, 15 books, some of which are absolute nonsense, at the facts that were buried in there. For example, the better the quality of the sighting, the more likely to be an unknown, which is just what I would expect if the unknowns were something different. I didn't expect that to be the case, but it turned out to be true. I found that there were a whole host, 21% of the cases couldn't be identified, separate from the ones for which there wasn't enough information. And one of the things that shocked me, and I was working on classified programs at the time, I shouldn't have been, is that I found that I just lost my, because my call waiting is going there. somebody's going to have to wait to buy my book, I guess. The data there was shocking, and the Air Force press release was also shocking. That's the thing that surprised me. They said even the unknown 3% could have been identified as conventional phenomena if more complete observational data had been available. Well, the unknowns were not 3%, they were 21%, and they were completely separate from the 10% for which there was insufficient information. It was a direct lie, and that was by the Secretary of the Air Force. That shook me up, quite frankly. So that was a turning point for me, finding that. And then later on, of course, I was very intrigued with the Betty and Barney Hill case because of the star map work that went with it, which was darn good physics and very fascinating and taught me some things I didn't know beforehand. So there were a whole bunch of other good cases. The testimony in the congressional hearings of 68, Jim McDonald, Dr. James McDonald, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, a whole bunch. I was the only one of the 12 presenters who didn't have a Ph.D. So there was a lot of good stuff presented there, which was very impressive. And, of course, I come at this having worked in advanced propulsion systems and know something about security because all the test results and so forth were classified. And that was one of the things that bothered me about this, Dr. Krause's book, for example, Beyond Star Trek. Let me see, where's the phrase? If the political climate changes and the use of nuclear reactors in space becomes acceptable, a better option might be what is called a nuclear electric propulsion system. Now, the only trouble with that sentence is that the Russians have launched more than 36 reactors into space. The public wouldn't know that reading this book, and I gather Dr. Krause doesn't know it. That's why I said about the nuclear thermal hydrogen propellant system. We've operated them, big ones, 30 years ago. It isn't up on the stuff. And often we find people putting down what they're not up on.
Okay. Matt, let me ask Larry to come in here and comment, Mike.
Well, I think, again, you know, he presented the fact that first of all, I'm not as surprised nor appalled, I suppose, by the fact that there are lies in some top secret studies. But again, the fact that there are inconsistencies is evidence to me that there are inconsistencies, and the fact that there are unknowns is not surprising to me. I would be amazed if every single observation were explicable, it would have made, because it doesn't happen anywhere else in life. Okay, the point is, and again, the caller says that those people are open-minded, you present the information, and they can choose for themselves, and I agree with that completely. And I think the point is that you have to be willing to be proven wrong. And the only way, if people have the courage to be proven wrong, and that means submitting to scientific journals under peer review, then I think their ideas are worth investigating. If they're not, they're highly suspect. And I get about 25 letters a day from people who are not only just talking about UFOs, talking to me about that Einstein was wrong, talking to me that the Earth is 2,000 years old, talking to me about any number of things, and I could spend my entire life exploring every one of them, and I advise every one of them to do the same thing.
I understand submit that. To Larry, I understand journal. You've got to have a filter to husband your time properly.
Moreover, they should submit to scientific journals.
Okay, now I've got to bring one other thing up in our remaining minutes, Dan. Hold on. This is important because it just came to me in an email. And it does involve what we see. It does involve the article with your name on it, Larry, and I'm not sure you came up with this information, or perhaps...
The New York Times probably did.
Yeah, well, we need to talk about this because it involves a potential slander of Whitley Strieber's reputation. I don't believe you did it, but let me just pose the question to you here on the email. Can you please ask Professor Krauss about aliens injecting chemicals? And I read this earlier tonight, into Whitley Strieber's brain from the New York Times article. Strieber says it is not in any of his books, it is not on his website, and it is a lie. And they got it from a website somewhere else on the web. Why is that in the article? Was that research?
In fact, it was in the article because the New York Times wanted to put some information on Whitley Strieber, so they went to the website and found it. But
all right, well, that
could be wrong, and if it is, I apologize to Mr. Strieber.
Okay, well, it is wrong, and Whitley denies it emphatically, and he felt it was intellectually dishonest.
It was in some of the literature on Mr. Strieber.
All right, but it didn't come from it. And I'm not speaking for Whitley.
I'm sure there's a lot of literature out there on me that's incorrect, yeah. And I apologize to him.
Okay, so we have an apology for Whitley Strieber because Professor Krauss did not put that particular thing in his story. It was put in by the New York Times. Clear?
Yes, absolutely. But
all right. I wanted to get that on the table and clear that.
No, I appreciate
before.
Your doing that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Professor.
Darn.
No lawsuit.
Darn.
No lawsuit. All right. We have just about 3 minutes. So let me, if I can, ask you, Stan, to give us about a minute and a half, and I'm going to get the remaining minute and a half from Larry, and then we're going to take a break.
I think what we need to recognize here is that when you spend time studying the evidence, I think you'll agree with my core conclusions, namely that the evidence is overwhelming that planet Earth is being visited by intelligently controlled extraterrestrial spacecraft. In other words, some, underlined 87 times, some UFOs are alien spacecraft. Two, that we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate. We haven't touched upon the national security aspects of this. Three, I haven't found any of the arguments made by people like Dr. Krauss or Carl Sagan to get rid of the first two statements that I made. Their testimony sounds great until you look at evidence. And finally, four, that we're dealing with the biggest story of the millennium, visits to planet Earth by alien spacecraft, successful cover-up of the best data, bodies and wreckage for over 50 years. Sensational claims, sure. That's why I put a lot of references in all my papers, and that was one of the disappointments with Beyond Star Trek. No references, not even a supplementary reading list, when there should have been one. If we're going to talk about a physicist looking at something as striking and startling and shocking and exciting as flying saucers.
Okay. Professor Krauss?
Well, I don't want people to be misled by what they may perceive my book to be about. It's about physics. It's not about an investigation of UFO incidents. It's about the basics. It's about the wonderful, remarkable physics that I love and my colleagues love and that makes the world, to me, a more exciting and mysterious place. Now, nothing in a sense would make me happier than if Mr. Friedman was correct in his four statements. As I said to him before, many, many people have told me if you knew what I knew about X, then you would be convinced. And the only thing I can say is convince me, and the way to do it is to publish in peer-reviewed scientific journals and present evidence that's so compelling that it's publishable. And I think I would love, nothing would make me happier than to know we're being visited and that there really are aliens coming to visit us, because it would be a fascinating, wonderful thing. I, as I said earlier, I firmly believe there are tons of intelligent civilizations in the galaxy. I also, however, based on simple estimates, believe that it's very unlikely that we'll ever know about them, but I would love to do just that. So convince me, and convince me not by talking about it or self-publishing, but by having the courage to be proved wrong by submitting to scientific journals.
Okay.
And that's what I get following today.
Well said. Dr. Krause's four books, Beyond Star Trek, The Physics of Star Trek, Fear of Physics, The Fifth Science, or The Fifth Essence, rather, Dark Matter in the Universe, all by Lawrence M. Krause. And the website, again, to get to see more about this is http://theory, T-H-E-O-R-Y, number 2, dot P-H-Y-S, dot C-W-R-U, dot E-D-U. Professor Krause, thank you very much for your time tonight. I know it's late, and we appreciate your contribution.
Well, I appreciate your patience.
Thank you. Thanks, Larry.
Bye-bye.
And we'll see you. Stan, we're going to take a break and come back and take some more phone calls and so forth. Our number here is 1-800-850-5043. So it was an interesting 2+ hours of conversation, and I would say that one part I want to emphasize is that Professor Krause did in fact apologize to Whitley Strieber before that statement in his article, which was, he said, put there by the New York Times staff to spice it up a bit. And I know how that works. Sometimes these things happen, and we'll again, on behalf of Professor Krause, extend that apology directly to Whitley Strieber. Hope you're listening, Whitley, and that takes care of that. Okay, Stan, how did you think it went?
Well, pretty much as expected. I want to explain something to the audience. So we were stepping over each other's signals, if you will. One of the reasons for that is that I'm in New Brunswick. I hear you and him from California. He hears me not from nearby, but from California. There's a time delay there. So unlike in situations where you're with somebody in the same studio or even in the same town, you don't know the other person is talking when you start to talk. That little delay, this is an extreme case. I'll bet you've never before had two people on who were 4 hours away from you. Long distance, in other words.
It's funny, yeah. And the signal actually... how it works, for those of you who don't know radio, it's rather complicated. I'm in Santa Barbara. I feed my audio to our network in the Phoenix area. They call Stan back 4 time zones away from me, and tonight our guest, Lawrence Krause, they somehow mix all those voices together. I hear everything in one little earphone that's rather like a hearing aid sort of thing. It's an earpiece, and it's all put together. And Phoenix, from there it goes via a very special high-speed phone line to New York, and from there up on the satellites, and from there down from the satellites into your radio stations and onto the internet receivers, and is dispersed accordingly. So it's quite a process.
Yeah, and we are not intentionally really interrupting each other, but we start to talk. We're both eager to talk, and we start talking at the same time, but I get no indication that he's talking until... after I've started talking.
Yeah, you can't hear him. And no, I think the listeners understand that. And it was handled very well with a lot of maturity and dignity, and it was fine. I just, again, go back to my original point, though, that here we have two brilliant physicists, one of whom has studied, immersed himself in the field of ufology and the evidence, overwhelming as it is, and the other has not really looked at the evidence. So there's a gulf there, a gap, and I think we did get some... Larry, at least a verbal commitment to take a serious look at some of the evidence. And who knows? Maybe he'll do that. Maybe he won't. But at least the right things were said.
Well, yeah, I'm glad I did my homework so I could...
You always do.
Let me illustrate a problem here with this whole business of likelihood and unlikelihood. Had a lie with statistics, somebody once said. But 1 in 10,000 people has hemophilia, a condition in which the blood doesn't clot properly. Okay, 1 in 10,000. What's the likelihood of having two people in the same family have hemophilia? Well, it's the product of 1 over one in 10,000 times, mm-hmm. one in 10 times, mm-hmm. you know, one in a billion. Unfortunately, that's not true, because there is a factor we haven't mentioned. It's a genetic.
It's genetic.
It's a developed disease, and half the boys of a woman who is a carrier will have it. So it's not at all unlikely that there will be two in the same family. The statistics, you know, can be tricky if you don't know their realm, where they apply. And one of my objections, of course, to not just Dr. Krause, is that they use words like likelihood and unlikelihood in areas that are completely removed from the physics. Behavior, for example. Now, where would an astronomer or physicist rank on your list of professional groups to which you would go for insight to the behavior of Earthlings, no less aliens? You might go to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a lawyer even, a nurse, a social worker. But to understand Earthlings, you'd go to an astronomer, hardly. And yet, here's an area where they're always commenting, and Dr. Krause did in his book, more than once, about how civilizations would behave. And I find that really quite extraordinary. It's not an area of his expertise, and he would admit that. So, it's one of the things that's needed here, and that doesn't often happen, is that books like his ought to be reviewed by people outside his field to point out the logical inconsistencies. This came up, you remember a few weeks back, there were two Canadian astronomers who were talking about they don't want those UFO nuts sending messages out there.
That's right.
Because that might attract aliens here to rule over us. They might take that as an invitation.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they want to listen, they want to send signals because they're the good guys. And they want to listen for signals. And that's all based on the presumption that the other guy doesn't have the capability of coming here. But their fear is based on the notion that he can come here. You know, he's going to pick up the signal and, hold on, Martha, we're going to get another planet to rule out. Those are logically inconsistent.
They're diametrically opposed.
Yeah, and it's the same with this notion that nobody would come here until they picked up, you know, I Love Lucy. That argument's been running around for years. As if a billion years ago they couldn't have determined that we were here. So it's these logical inconsistencies that get to me and are expected, let's face it. Also, one more. The notion that there would be nothing that would please him more. Now, Phil Klass has said that. Carl Sagan has said that. But it's quite obvious from what they've written that they don't think that at all. They would have to admit that they were terribly wrong, something that debunkers almost never want to admit. Now, we ufologists criticize each other all to pieces, as you know.
The blood is often so thick you got to wash your shoes afterwards. We'll be back with Stanton Friedman and your calls. Thanks to you who are online holding. Remember our number, 1-800-850-5043. See you in just a very few minutes. Stan, if I remember correctly, in all the years we've been talking, I don't think either one of us has ever had what we call a graphic knock you on your heels sighting that we've been able to report on firsthand, have we? I haven't.
Don't think so.
No. I've
never had a sighting, so.
Yeah, well, me neither. And I just, you know, not even something strange. But of course, they always tell me, well, Jeff, you've got to go outside and look up to see something, and I'm always inside working, so it's...
Hey, I've gone out there, and I still haven't seen anything. A little cold around here in the wintertime.
Yeah. One wonders if someone like Larry Krause, if he were to see one of these things, if he would have been in Phoenix and looked up and seen that 1,400-foot-long item going overhead, what that would have done.
That's part of the problem, is the absence of personal experience, but... another part of it is the reliance on one's own presumption. In his book, he several times says what most physicists think. He doesn't know what most physicists think about these things. I've spoken to dozens and dozens of professional groups besides the 600 colleges. Los Alamos National Lab, those are professional people. I spoke to the Wisconsin section of the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, to the Chrysler Corporation Management Club. These are within the last year. And these people are very interested. I judge by their questions, and I never duck questions. And so the notion that most physicists, that's comforting to somebody who's a non-believer, if you will, to think, well, other respectable people think the same way. But the polls have consistently shown the greater the education, the more likely to believe in flying saucers. That's the way it is, regardless of how we think it ought to be. And I mention that only because it's very important for people, their perception of how other people will react if they report a sighting. And I get a lot of hidden sightings told to me quietly, you know, because they don't want to be heard by the public, but by professional people. And I didn't ask, and I perhaps should have, but I would gather what the answer is from reading his background and stuff. And I did get a background sheet on Dr. Krause from Case Western Reserve. I don't know what he knew about me, probably nothing. But as far as I can tell, he's never worked under security. He's never worked in industry. And the couple of areas where I caught him up short are things that he knows nothing about.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope that he is interested enough, truly, to take a good serious look at the evidence that is there. David in Little Rock would like to say something, listening to us on 103.7 The Signal, KSYG, out of Little Rock. Hi, David.
Hi, good evening.
Evening.
Jeff, a wonderful show, a fantastic premise, and unfortunately the debate was a one-sword debate. Stanton was armed, and Larry, who I own a couple of his books, was not. I was not really prepared. But I'm salivating at being able to ask this question, Sam. I really, truly am. It's rare that I get to talk to someone of your caliber. In the Learning Channel, or it was the Learning Channel that had that wonderful series Jeff, you commented on.
Yeah,
one of the most remarkable pieces of, let's call it, evidence that I've read about or seen was that segment on from the video from the space shuttle. And this particular segment shot from one of the astronauts on the space shuttle showed what I believed to be a energy weapon of some sort that was fired from the planet into space, and that predicated or prompted a direct movement or change in this particular UFO.
That was STS-48, yes.
Yep. And I would say that was compelling to me, real quickly, was that supposedly, according to the program, it was the geographic location of the estimated origin of the supposedly energy could have been at a base where quite possibly that could have been generated by, you know, by some of our scientists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that whole business, I respect Jack Kasher a great deal, Dr. Jack Kasher. He's a professor of physics at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, and he spent an awful lot of time with one thing that's very frustrating for me is that there's a lot of data there, certainly things moving around that you can see and moving in peculiar ways. We can't really make a good judgment about how far away they are. And so I'm always left with a kind of feeling that it belongs in my gray basket. Intriguing, interesting. I wish I knew more, and I'll bet you NASA knows more that they're not telling us. But where do we go from there? So that's the kind of thing where physics could certainly be involved. And, you know, I mentioned Dr. Jack Kasher. I would normally call him Jack, but in deference to our previous guest, I wanted to stress we're talking about scientists. And I was really shocked because in one of his other books, there are some references. In the physics of Star Trek, I believe, yeah, he's got some references. And here, not a one. That's distressing. That's you know, that's contrary to what you normally expect in physics. First thing you do is a literature search. But if you think that there's no literature to search, you don't bother, you see.
Oh, excellent program tonight.
Well, good.
Thanks very much.
You know, I hope that anybody listening who knows, I'm still looking for Roswell witnesses, and I've got one deathbed confession that I heard about 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and I'm following up on, and other people that the person might have told before he died besides the one that told me. And I'm looking for others, and I mention that because I know when we first had the Unsolved Mysteries program about Roswell, because I instigated it, this 1989, I was given access to the people who called in, and I was amazed at how many people out there knew something. Well, not all of it was useful information, obviously, but, you know, 10% of 50 callers is a lot more than none. So, if there's anybody out there...
And there are.
Yeah, I'm sure there are, who has an uncle or a cousin who quietly, when seeing something on television, said, you know, I was there, and that's true. Something like that. I'd sure like to hear from those people. And I won't use their names without permission. You know that, Jeff. I don't use names without permission. But it's the data we want, because we're racing the Undertaker, and he's winning the battle so far.
Yeah, well, I tell you, as we come up on our next break here, and thank you, callers, for holding, 1-800-850-5043. It is always amazing to me, sir, how dramatic and incredible these so-called deathbed confessions are, the ones I've heard about. I mean, we're talking about people who look at their older men dying, looking at their wives and children, and with often, reportedly, nearly tears in their eyes, saying it was all true, and they basically admit it. It's really dramatic as it can get.
Yeah.
Really,
well, they can call me.
All right, 1-877-457-0232. 877-457-0232 for Stanton Friedman's books and materials. And don't miss his video. It is great. Be right back. And that brings us to our final segment tonight with Stanton Friedman. And let's go back on the telephone to Texas, to Huntsville, Texas, and say hello to Barrett. Hi, Barrett. How are you tonight?
How are you, Jeff?
Fine.
An excellent program, of course.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Too bad it was a little... I'm sorry that Dr. Krause seems to be in the position of many critics without the capability or hands-on experience. I would be interested in Stanton's response to the idea of when carbon-60 was discovered, the Buckminster fullerene. I couldn't imagine that the chemists were more surprised, because they claimed that they knew everything that there was to know about carbon.
Well, the history of science is full of that kind of thing, and it's a point I, not very subtly and not very well made, that. Progress comes from doing things differently. We all have to be ready to understand that there are things that we don't know, even within our own little world. And, you know, the great physicist Lord Thompson in, 1892 told his graduate students in physics in England that he really felt sorry for them, because all the great discoveries in physics had been made. Einstein didn't think that you could get anything useful from E equals MC squared. Neither did Lord Rutherford, a great, brilliant man. But it was in a different realm. It's technology. It's using, getting the inside slant, if you will, on how to use the technology. I'm sure that the guys who invented lasers didn't think they'd be in supermarkets, checkout counters all over the world. Nope. And so there are different people doing different things, and I think that we just don't fully appreciate it, and physics has considered itself sort of the queen of sciences, if you will, and which should have been obvious, I guess, in the previous 2 hours. And unfortunately, there's more to heaven and earth, as somebody said, than we physicists know. And much of what goes on in the world is determined by other motivations than physicists have. Now, you know, just as a side comment, Larry said something about the great wonders of technology brought to us in the 20th century. more people have been killed by other people in this century than in any previous century as well.
Well, only, what, 30 to 40 million 50 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, and, well, some people say 60 million, but it doesn't matter. The total number is huge. More people have starved, probably, this past century, this century we're in, than in any previous century, despite all our technology. So there is more to the world than just physicists' understanding of what we know now. And it's a very important point. I'll be, as a matter of fact, I should put a plug in. I'll be speaking at the Intruders Foundation conference in New York, and I think you've had some of the people on, Jeff.
Yes.
That's on the 10th of April, a Saturday. And my focus will be on, you can get here from there. That's sort of the focus of tonight's show.
Yes.
And I'll be speaking 2 weeks later, incidentally, at Kentucky MUFON in Bowling Green, Kentucky. There I'll be talking about the Cosmic Watergate. And I think my Mutual UFO Network symposium paper for July in Washington, D.C., a great town to visit, incidentally, lots to see and hear, will be, again, on this you can't get here from there or can you kind of thing. Because there is a need for an opportunity to present, say, an hour, hour and a half program that deals with this in a logical, straightforward fashion, that raises the objections of the Dr. Krauses of the world, and then shows why they don't hold. And so, for those out there, the ball game isn't over yet. The fat lady hasn't sung. I'll be singing a lot.
How about a phone number for that conference in New York? You haven't been.
Oh, boy.
I don't have it written down, but we will have on the program Wednesday night John Velez.
Oh, great.
And let's see, Wednesday, is it it's tomorrow night, folks, and John will be here to bring us all the information.
Well, he'll have all that information.
Yeah, one of the great conferences on the abduction phenomenon ever held. Maybe it's a great one. And that's coming up.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be outstanding. Barrett, are you still there, by the way?
Yeah, I'm still
okay, one more question, if you'd like.
I just have one question for you. You know, you've had, what's his name, Edward Fauché.
Ed Fauché.
Right, on your program. Mm-hmm. And here's a man that has worked with black programs, who has mm-hmm. worked with these triangular aircraft that can do some of the things that...
Well, he hasn't worked with the triangular aircraft, but he's aware of them.
Well, he knows a lot about the fact that they may be RPVs, and they could certainly do the aerodynamic stunts that Dr. Krauss claims can't be done.
Pretty close to it.
Larry didn't have a good understanding, really, of resistance to acceleration, what you can stand, properly constrained, and all the other things. That's a complicated business that NASA had to do an awful lot of work on, because there's a real premium from being able to, say, stand 5Gs going up instead of 2Gs. It takes far less energy. And it's a crucial point that the amount of energy it takes, which is one of the key arguments against, you know, you can't get here from this, is very much dependent on the flight profile. It's not independent of it. You can't determine that amount of energy from basic physics. And you're certainly right, unmanned aerial vehicles, UAV, I love that phrase.
Well, remotely piloted vehicles are...
Well, they're a little different. Unmanned ones are a little different from remotely... Remotely piloted ones implies that you could also use a pilot if you wanted to see. These systems are designed not to have living beings on board. A few microbes here and there, you know, we don't count those. But,
you can put a lot more G's that way.
Yeah, the point here, too, is that there's a big black budget world out there. Advanced technology doesn't, in general, get developed in academia.
That's right.
It gets developed under classified projects in industry, often funded by people like the CIA and NSA and NRO. You know, think about it for a minute. Last year, a launch vehicle blew up. It was carrying an NRO, National Reconnaissance Office satellite. The cost of the satellite, not the rocket, the satellite, was over $1 billion.
The big B went boom, yep.
Yeah, I mean, that tells you that's a very impressive piece of machinery.
Still suggesting that it may have been plutonium on that too, but nobody knows.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
I have one minor comment real quick.
Real quick, yeah.
How about the fellow Ingo Swann that you had on there and the experiment that he did with Hal Puthoff out there at SRI about the magnetometer? And EFP doesn't work, then why is that, why
very
is that
now? Well, there's more data that needs to be looked at by people like Professor Krauss.
Yes.
Maybe he'll get a chance to. Let's hope so. Thank you, Barrett.
Okay, man. Take
care. All right. You too. Thanks. And very quickly, let's go to Ben in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening to us tonight and on the net. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Jeff. How are you? Great show tonight.
Thank you.
Listen, I had a quick question and or information for Stan. I understand several months ago Stan was looking for some information on Dr. Charles Ethan Ray in Oak Ridge. Stan, is that correct?
Yeah, he was a professor of medicine, a surgeon at the University of Minnesota, but during the war, he was indeed based at Oak Ridge, and it's been suggested in some of these new documents stated that he was one of the people who autopsied an alien. And it turned out he was a big medical man with the high-level security clearance because he was head of all the medical staff at both Oak Ridge and Los Alamos and Hanford. You know something about him.
Yeah, Stan, I sent you a fax back on January 11th, and I'm not sure if you got that. It was in regards to a couple of documents I'd uncovered regarding Dr. Ray. One of them dated June 21st of 1943 regarding his appointment as clinical chief at Clinton Laboratories, which a.k.a. Oak Ridge.
Yes.
And another one, April 12th of 1944, reference to Major Ray, I assume the same person. I don't know if you got my facts or not.
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact, and about the same time, not only was I traveling, but it turns out the University of Minnesota Archive had some a portion of an autobiography of Dr. Ray.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And in it, he describes... very intriguing-sounding man, incidentally. Lots of medical specialties, and the Pope has given him honors because he's helped poor people, and, you know, quite a guy. Very impressive to me, anyway. And one of the things that turned up, he even tells stories about an encounter with Robert Oppenheimer and with General Groves, whom he knew. Groves dragged him into the job.
Whoa.
So when you're at that high level, the notion that he would have been selected to do an autopsy is not irrational at all. As a matter of fact, rule number one, something happens that's highly classified, you got to use people who have high-level security clearances and that you know have both the clearance and the competence.
Right.
These tricks, you know, you can't wait and say, well, I'll wait around for a year and let's find somebody. So Groves would undoubtedly have been consulted. And I remember seeing your stuff in the original background material I had on Dr. Ray. It hadn't mentioned this, call it the Oak Ridge Clinton Labs connection, or it was only when I found that he, you know, was on a first-name basis with Groves and with Oppenheimer.
Come up on time here. Almost out of time.
Oh, okay. Now, I'm sorry. Stanley, toss one quick name at you. Have you heard of a, they called him a Stump Bowman, General W. Washington Bowman? Have you ever heard that name? Nope. Something you want to look into. As a matter of fact, I might just send you some information on that. And I'll, as a matter of fact, I will, Stan. I'll send you a fax. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for the call.
Can I give my website?
Oh, gosh. Go ahead.
I found it.
Of course.
www.b-j-enterprises.com/sf-page.html. That's a long one.
All right. Thank you, Stan. 877-457-0232 is the phone number to call for Stan's marvelous material. Do get his book. Do get the video. And thank you, my friend. We will talk soon.
Okay.
Thanks. Goodness. Great program to hear, and I hope you enjoyed it. And I'll be back tomorrow night with Michael Lindemann and much more for you in 21 Hours.